tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 16th of March 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, it's the start of another week, and we have quite an exciting week in store for you listeners. We have an interview with Sam Melia, which will be published on Thursday, and I recorded that with him last week. It's about an hour and a half long, and we really could have gone on for much longer than that. We had lots of other things that we could have talked about. I think it was a really good discussion, talking about his experience with the justice system, what he thought of prison, what he thinks of probation, not just his own probation, but probation for other prisoners. It was a really interesting interview that I think people are going to like. So we've got that on Thursday. We've got Peter Rushton coming back for another interview, I think the week after that, which will be a Daily Nationalist interview. I think we might get Peter Rushton on every 2 months, each time an edition of Heritage and Destiny comes out, so that he can talk about the research that he's been doing for that. But today, the news story that I want to talk about concerns migration once again into Britain, and it's such a hot topic at the moment. There are so many news stories about this that it's difficult to find one in particular to concentrate on. I've got a headline here from GB News: migrants to be handed 40% of new homes by 2030. So that's just 4 years away, and almost half of all homes will be going to migrants. Now, I've made a point before that all the new homes must be going to migrants, because the Indigenous British are not producing enough to replace ourselves, which means that we would actually need less homes than we have now. And yet we keep building all these new homes. So to me, that says that all of those new homes have to be going to migrants if white people are not producing enough to replace ourselves. But this article here claims that it's 40% that are going to be going to them. Another article here: Labour scolded as asylum housing spend takes a staggering chunk out of foreign aid budget. We could buy 3 warships. A large amount of the money that's supposed to go on foreign aid, which is soft power, basically. We give out funds to third world countries, and in return, we expect something in return for it. What we should be saying is, if you want foreign aid, you have to be accepting asylum seekers back to your country. But we are effectively supposed to get their support in certain things like UN votes, things like that. But we get nothing back at all after spending the foreign aid budget on housing asylum seekers in Britain. But the article that I wanted to talk about today comes from the Daily Mail, and it goes into some detail. The headline is: Inside the UK town where women feel under siege from male migrants bussed in from a sprawling camp Starmer said must close 2 years ago. And of course, they have to make this point that Keir Starmer hasn't done anything about this, but the Conservative Party did nothing about it either. All of this mass immigration happened under the Conservatives. It's now happening under Labour. And I think the only political party that might actually slow it down somewhat is Restore Britain under Rupert Lowe. I am really, really impressed by Rupert Lowe. I check his tweets every day. There's nothing in them that I wouldn't agree with. I wholeheartedly support him. As you can see on the website, we have a Restore Britain advert there because we want as many people to support Rupert as possible. I think he's a genuinely good man, and he will do his best, I think, to slow things down at least. Anyway, this article here, it says, at least twice a week, usually at mid-morning, a fleet of Ford Transit minibuses pulls into Braintree Town Centre and a group of up to 50 men disembark. And Braintree is in Essex. It's southeast of the country, just outside London. So that's 50 people arriving at least every week, twice a week. Most appear to be in their 20s and 30s, and all are asylum seekers, or alleged asylum seekers, mainly from the Middle East, Africa and Asia, who are recent arrivals to the UK on small boats from France. And my answer to that would be, well, how can they be asylum seekers if they arrive from France? Are they claiming asylum from France? Are they saying that France is at war and that they had to get away from France? Well, no, as it's told us here, they come from the Middle East, Africa and Asia. They've come from halfway around the world. So it's not that they are asylum seekers. It's that they are economic migrants that are claiming to be persecuted and that they have to come to Britain, probably because they have relatives in Britain or because they speak English. Really, the reason why they want to come to Britain is because they know that they will be much better looked after in Britain than they would be in their home countries. With little else to do, the men largely hang around the Essex town in groups for several hours before being collected and returned to a former RAF base where they are housed. So I got it a little bit wrong there. It wasn't 50 of them arriving every week. It's twice a week that 50 of them are bussed into the town and then just left there in the town to please themselves. I mean, don't forget, these people have broken into the country, which is like breaking into a house. And I think most people in Britain would want to see these people locked up for that. And they're not locked up. They're rewarded for that. They're put up in fancy hotels. In this case, they're put up in a military camp. But they're certainly not locked up like they should be. I mean, if somebody breaks the law in Britain and it's a serious crime, they would be put on remand. They'll be put in prison until they can have a court case. And that's what I think most people want to see happen to these alleged asylum seekers when they break into the country. They should be put in prison conditions. They shouldn't be free to roam the streets, especially not after we've had so many rapes and murders and stabbings that have been carried out by them. As we'll see here from this article, there's a lot of other things that they do that don't actually end up with charges against them, but just make life extremely difficult for the people that actually live in that area. While these day trips may seem innocuous, the alleged behaviour of some during the visits has caused huge concern and backlash among locals, as the Daily Mail found out when we visited the town this week. While several people we spoke to said they had not had any problems with the asylum seekers and expressed sympathy for their plight, we also heard troubling accounts of migrants housed at the centre targeting women. And this isn't really surprising. There will be people that haven't actually had any interactions with the migrants, or perhaps they have had interactions with them and they've met some of the ones that are fairly decent people. There must be some decent people among them, and they will base their opinion on that one interaction, rather than basing their opinion from looking at them as a group and saying, well, as a group, even though there might be a decent individual that you met, there are other members of that group that are causing problems. And that's the way you have to look at these things. You have to look at them as a group. Otherwise, you won't notice any patterns at all, and you won't be able to defend yourself against these problems if you just see things on an individual basis rather than on a group basis. I mean, this is one of the problems that they're having with the inquiry into the grooming gangs. The Labour government are refusing to even use the correct terms for it. They're still refusing to admit that it's a problem amongst the Muslim community and that Muslims are massively overrepresented in these grooming gangs, because they want to look at them as individuals. And if you look at these left-wing groups that like Unite Against Racism, they see the problem as, oh, it's a male problem. It's men that are doing this. They don't differentiate that and say, well, white men are not likely to be involved in grooming gangs, but Muslim men are likely to be involved in grooming gangs. So it shows that there's a problem with the Muslim community causing this. But if you're just looking at them as individuals, then you'll never notice that. And of course, the mainstream media and the government, they don't want us to look at these people as representatives of groups. They think we should just be looking at them as individuals. And I think the ones that say here, oh, we haven't had any problems with them, I think they're just looking at them as individuals. Locals described the bored groups of men taking pictures of schoolgirls, blowing kisses at female staff in beauty salons, and making teenagers cry by wolf whistling at them. And this taking pictures of schoolgirls, this is a very common allegation against them, is that this is the sort of thing that they will do. They're not used to seeing women at all. They're used to seeing them covered up. In Africa, when they do see women there, there's a very high incidence of rape in Africa. And the men there, a lot of the men there don't seem to have developed self-control. And if they see a woman, they might as well rape them. I can remember being told a while back that there wasn't actually a different word for rape. It was the same word for sex as it is for rape over in Africa. So they didn't actually differentiate between the two until the West went over there and said, well, this is wrong, what's going on here. You can't just rape these women. And I think that shows just how different the culture is between parts of Africa and parts of Britain. I mean, in parts of Africa, I forget the name of the country, but the women there, they sell fish, and in order to get the fish, they have sex with the fishermen. Whichever fisherman they want to buy the fish from, they have sex with them because they don't have any other way to pay for it. So sex is looked at in a very different way in Africa. And as I say, in Muslim countries, strict Muslim countries like Afghanistan, Pakistan, women are covered from head to foot. So when these migrants see white women, schoolgirls wearing school skirts, they think that they're offering sex to them. They think that they are deliberately exciting them or enticing them. And when you hear of the ones that are in court who have raped these young girls, they say, I don't know what came over me. I couldn't control myself. And they'll often say that the woman consented, because they will think that the woman consented because the woman was wearing a skirt. Because the woman must know that men become attracted to seeing girls' legs and certain parts of a girl's body. And they will reason with themselves that because the girl was showing her legs, she was consenting to having sex, because she knew that a man's passions would be aroused by that. Now, as men in the West, we have self-control and we're used to controlling these things. But if you are used to seeing women covered up all the time, and then you see young girls' legs or flesh, they're not going to be used to having self-control, and they're not going to be able to control themselves. And they're going to do things that they end up regretting. They're going to end up doing things that can ruin the young girl's life. And it will also ruin the migrant's life, because he'll be put in prison for 7 or 8 years. And they will really hate the young girl. I think this is why in some instances they will murder the girl, because they'll be so angry at the girl and they will blame the girl for having caused this. It's a completely different way of looking at sexual relations in some of these countries to in the West, and not enough people talk about this, and our government is to blame, because they know these cultural differences, and yet they still end up putting these people up in hotels. Even more disturbingly, some women were said to be terrified after being followed on the way home from work. So as I said, some of these instances, they're not things that people could be arrested and charged for, but they're just making life extremely difficult for the people that actually live there. Several said they are now scared of going out alone, and some have even started arming themselves with safety packs, including whistles and alarms. Many pin the blame for the problem on the Prime Minister, who they accuse of reneging on an apparent pre-election promise to close the centre. And of course it is. It's the Prime Minister's problem, but he will say that the people that are complaining about this, oh, it's just the far right. He will use ad hominems and attack the people that are complaining about this. And we'll also get told that, oh, no, we just hate the colour of people's skin. We're not concerned about white girls being raped, white girls being murdered. We're not concerned about our own people being too frightened to walk the streets at night. We just hate the colour of people's skin, and we just blame these migrants for all our problems. That's what we're told by the media. That's what we're told by Keir Starmer. It's a very disingenuous way of deflecting the criticism onto something else. It's got nothing whatsoever to do with the colour of somebody's skin. It's to do with protecting one's own people. And as they say here, they blame the problem on the Prime Minister. They don't blame the migrants. They blame the Prime Minister. Migrants aren't the problem. It's migration policy that is the problem. I mean, this is one of the issues with the Compact for Migration, the UN Compact for Migration, that a lot of countries signed up to a couple of years back. The countries that signed up to it, they committed to making migration a protected characteristic. Now, protected characteristics are things like race, sex, ethnicity, religion, and all of those things are essential parts of a person. But migration is a policy. That's the difference. Migration is a policy. It's not a religion. It's not a race. It's not a sex or a gender. It's a government policy. So what they're actually saying is they're signing up to making it hate speech for people to criticise a certain government policy. So you can see there that the whole point of these hate speech laws is to prevent people from being able to criticise certain government policies. And that also became clear during COVID times, when the Centre for Countering Digital Hate was reporting people for being critical of vaccine, and they basically accused the people that were against vaccines of promoting hate. So these laws and this idea of countering hate, it's really about countering people that are criticising government policy. The asylum seekers are housed 12 miles outside Braintree at former RAF Wethersfield, originally built in the Second World War as a base for Allied bombers to launch sorties against the Nazis. It continued to play a vital security role through the Cold War, when US bombers were stationed there to deter Soviet aggression. When that ended, it became a training centre for military police. But in 2023, amidst huge numbers of small boat arrivals and the spiralling cost of housing them in hotels, the Conservatives started using it to lodge single adult male asylum seekers with an original capacity of 580. So that's a lot of young males all to be living in the same place. And we hear in this headline that Keir Starmer is saying, oh, well, we'll have to do away with this. But what is Keir Starmer's way of dealing with this? Well, we could see that from the other earlier headline that 40% of all new homes are going to go to migrants within the next 6 years. Keir Starmer's not going to send these people back. He's going to put them in the council houses. So there's going to be even less council houses for the Indigenous British people that live in the area. As well as accommodation, three meals a day, free Wi-Fi and some recreational facilities, the plan included free transport to nearby Essex towns, including Braintree. And this is where many of the problems began. I mean, who else gets free transport into town? I mean, some of these people are travelling to see the doctor in taxis, and there's a huge amount of money that's actually being spent on private taxis for them. Susan Doan, the joint owner of Braintree's Sisters Nails and Beauty, explained, they hang around outside the shop, blowing kisses at the staff here. During the dark nights, you would not want to leave here on your own. See, these are things, again, that they couldn't really be arrested for. And they would say, oh, we're just being nice. They're just trying to get the girls' attention, really, by doing that, by blowing kisses at them. But, of course, that's going to be very intimidating for the women, because that's not the sort of behaviour that you see adult Indigenous men engaging in. During the dark nights, you would not want to leave here on your own. I had a client who left here and was followed by a group. She was terrified and so came straight back. If the government wants to accommodate them and give them access to education, then fair enough. But I should be allowed to stand outside my own store without getting kisses blown at me and things being said to me. Well, why should the government be accommodating them? Why should the government be giving them access to education? There is no war in France. France is where they have come from. She described a recent incident when she went outside to ask a group to move away from the shop front to an empty bench nearby. They ignored me and I got angry with them, and then they spat their chicken bones at me from the food they had been eating. The disrespect from them towards women is unreal. I have even seen them sitting outside of Tesco taking pictures of schoolgirls. What is being done about this? Well, nothing's being done about it. And those pictures of schoolgirls, they will be sent back home to their other Africans and other Afghans as, look how amazing it is here. There are naked women walking around all the time. These naked women are walking around and you can go up to them and chat them up, and the police won't even arrest you. And if the fathers or the brothers of these schoolgirls complain about this or say anything, they will be locked up by the police for hate speech. You can just imagine the sort of messages that they will be sending back, bragging about their holiday in the West. Like many we spoke to, Miss Doan is furious at Sir Keir Starmer. Weeks before the 2024 general election, with a local backlash against the centre already underway, the Labour leader told regional TV news that the camp needs to close. Although he declined to put a date on it, he said, "I do know how keenly this is felt locally, and understandably so. Thrilled locals assumed the new government would immediately shut the camp down." But perhaps unsurprisingly, given Starmer's track record on keeping promises, nearly 2 years on, not only is the camp still operating as an asylum centre, but last summer the Labour administration announced its capacity would increase temporarily up to 1,225, more than double its original size. So instead of doing something about it, they doubled the problem. Ms. Doohan said, "Keir Starmer says one thing and then does another. And you wonder why people are getting angry, because you are doing nothing for us. What is being done to safeguard the women and children and make sure that people feel safe coming into their own town?" Well, your needs to be safeguarded and your needs for protection are lower down the scale than the need to protect the asylum seekers. That's the way the government sees it. And you can see their logic there, because what they will say is, they will say, well, if you're an asylum seeker and you don't speak English and you're on your own in another country, surely that means that you are more vulnerable than somebody that lives in that country. They will be more vulnerable because they're on their own, effectively, in a completely different country. So we have to look after these people more than we have to look after the people that live in the country. That's the logic that they will be using. But of course, the problem with that, or the reason why this arises and why these people think this, is because they don't have any loyalty, they don't have any ethnic in-group preference for their own people. This is why nationalism would solve these problems. If you promote nationalism, you promote caring and showing concern and being charitable towards your own in-group, and their needs come first. If you were to look at it like that, then they would say, yes, these people are obviously vulnerable because they don't know how to speak English and it's not their own country, but our priorities have to go towards our own ethnic group. And these people here, they already have their own ethnic group. It's up to their own ethnic group to look after them. It's not up to us to look after them. And if anybody questions that, you can say, well, who is going to put our ethnic group's needs first if we do not put our own ethnic group's needs first? Because certainly nobody else is going to put the Indigenous British needs front and foremost if the British people are not doing that. Braintree's Sue Ryder charity shop, raising money for end-of-life care, now has a no groups over three sign plastered on its front door above a poster reading, "Open for business, closed for crime." The three-person rule was brought in on the police's advice, the Daily Mail was told, after the store was targeted by groups of asylum seekers. A source said groups of about 10 would go in and stock would vanish. I mean, imagine that, going into a charity shop and thieving. They're effectively stealing from charity people, cancer sufferers, which is where the money would be going to, because it's a charity shop. A female worker at another charity shop told how she was living in fear. One of the asylum seekers kept coming in, always to the end of the day, and would always flick through the women's clothes, she said. I told police and they have spoken to him. He was very scary. But of course, how can you prosecute somebody for going through women's clothes in a charity shop? Well, of course you can't. But it will rightfully be making this woman here feel very uneasy. On a different occasion with a different asylum seeker, I was followed on my way to work. He came at me sideways and I just rushed to one of the market traders. And the fact that this woman is saying this and that the Daily Mail were quite easily able to find her, it means that this will be a common occurrence. It won't just be something that happened to this one woman. It will have happened to quite a few people that live there, I should imagine. Serena Fletcher, owner of Stylistic Salon, said, I've heard a few stories of women being followed by them when they come into town. One said she was followed from Boots as she walked through the town and then turned and went back into Boots because she knew there was security there. And it's not just women who are concerned. One man with good reason to worry is Shabe Shami, who was brought up an Arabic-speaking Christian in Lebanon, but was forced to flee in his youth as civil war tore his country apart. After arriving in the UK in 1993, he was eventually granted asylum, and for the last two decades, the hard-working father of three has run Braintree's popular Yummy Cafe. Many of those asylum seekers who are here do not want to be here because they see people who are not Muslim as being impure, he explains. The cultures are so hugely different to those coming from certain countries such as Sudan, Syria, Libya or Afghanistan. So you end up getting situations where you have sexually frustrated men saying totally inappropriate things to young women and girls. They need to be integrated, but more importantly, they need to want to be integrated and to know how we live in this country. Well, of course, why would they want to be integrated? They look at this, they look at the way we live, and they say it's absolutely depraved, it's completely degenerate. Their women are running around naked. None of them are virgins when they get married. They all sleep with each other. They make pornography. They are going to look at us as being absolutely degenerate and they're not going to want to have anything to do with us. And as it says here, I mean, this is a Muslim guy this is a Christian guy that's saying this that was brought up in a Muslim country. He says that they see us as impure. He says, when I was young in Lebanon, it was normal for people of all religions to live in the same area and to get on with each other. But that was our norm. That was our culture. For Mr. Shami, the situation got personal when a group wolf-whistled at his 14-year-old daughter, reducing her to tears. They told me, we're sorry, we didn't know she was your daughter. I told them that is not the point. It doesn't matter whose daughter it is. She is a 14-year-old girl. And that shows you this difference here. They look at that and they think, well, this is wrong because it belongs to him. It's his property, so we shouldn't be wolf-whistling. But if we see others who, and we don't see them with a male, then clearly they don't belong to anyone and they're fair game for us to wolf whistle at. And that's the way that they will see it, because the way they see it, women should be accompanied by a father or a brother in order to protect them. If they're not walking along with a father or a brother to protect them, then that means that they want somebody else to protect them. And then they're going to get offended if they get pushed away, because they're going to be saying, well, this woman obviously needs a man. She's walking around on her own. And yet when I offered, she pushed me away. And that, again, it's cultural differences that are causing these problems. In a recent letter to the Home Office, former Home Secretary and Braintree's Tory MP James Cleverly warned that the site is creating real problems in the local area. He wrote, asylum seekers at the site are transported to surrounding towns and villages with little to do other than hang around. Groups of bored young men in any circumstances are intimidating, and local shopkeepers have reported a declining footfall. These developments are contributing to rising tension and division within communities that have already shown considerable patience and cooperation. However, the letter appears to have fallen on deaf ears, and with an apparent lack of help from government, extremist elements have taken their chance to exploit local concerns. When around 1,000 demonstrators marched through Braintree Town Centre to complain about the site in January, They were joined by, quote, far-right thug and activist Tommy Robinson, real name Stephen Yaxley Lennon, close quote. In the vacuum of official support from authorities, a local women's group, run by an advocate of Robinson, has started giving out safety packs for women, including whistles and alarms. Well, that's quite sensible, but I'm not quite sure how well they will do unless you're surrounded by people that are likely to come running if they hear a whistle and alarm. The problems aren't only in Braintree, but also around and in the camp itself, which is surrounded by farmland. Now, this is interesting because this is an allegation that will be made about the countries that these people come from, and now it's something that's actually happening in Britain. Len and Margaret Freshwater, aged 84 and 82, moved to their 17th century former farmhouse 2 years before the base began housing asylum seekers. I'm not sure we would have bought it if we had known at the time what was to come, says Mr. Freshwater, adding that asylum seekers mostly do not cause problems. But some of them go out into the field to go to the toilet. You can see it. And the toilet paper, which is disgusting. You could just imagine it, can't you? Toilet paper with fecal matter on it, blowing all around the fields and piled up human faeces. Simone Sutcliffe, who has lived in a house just yards from the base for 44 years and previously worked there when it belonged to the RAF, raised the same concern. They don't bother us too much, really, but they do their business in the field. It even happened just near our front garden before. I don't understand that. It's awful. There are toilets inside. Yes, but these people will see those toilets as being unhealthy because somebody else has sat on that toilet. They will see it as being more hygienic to go out and do their business in a field. That's why they're doing it. Again, massive cultural differences that really can't be overcome. Other locals said they had been told fights had previously broken out between rival nationalities and religions inside the base. And violence in the camp certainly appears to be an issue. Well, of course it would be if you've got 1,000 young men together within one camp. Last month at Colchester Magistrates Court, Adnani Mohammed, 25, was sentenced to 150 hours of unpaid work for violently attacking security staff at the site in a drunken rage, including headbutting one victim 3 times and kicking another. Of course, alcohol is another thing that they don't have in their own countries. It's like they can come to Britain and do all the things that they're not allowed to do in their own countries. It's the very worst of the people from those countries which will be coming to this country because of that as well. The court heard he received £49 per week after he arrived in the UK, although it is believed most of those at Wethersfield get the £10 weekly stipend given to asylum seekers in lodgings where meals are provided. And of course, that's one of the reasons why they go out and steal as well. Last year, security workers at the site who were sacked from their jobs after refusing to work in a dispute over paying conditions described how the asylum seekers go out shopping and come back with alcohol and weapons. One told the BBC there was no protection for security officers. A few were assaulted and spat upon. There is no comeback when you mention it. There are no powers. At night they have parties with alcohol, and being 20-odd security officers on site versus 1,200 asylum seekers, you can see what we are dealing with. We have no protection whatsoever. Another worker described how the guards' task was to break up the disturbances among those housed there. One colleague got attacked, pushed against the wall. There are times I have felt very vulnerable, he said. And this, again, this is why they should be in prison. They should be in cells in prison, being punished for breaking into the country, not being rewarded with to be able to roam around freely and rape and murder whoever they feel like raping and murdering. In early 2024, 7 months after it started housing asylum seekers, the then independent Chief Inspector of Borders and Immigration, David Neil, said a lack of purposeful activity was likely to have a deleterious impact on residents' mental health and a heightened risk of disorder. So this is why they'll provide them things to do as well. They'll give out contracts to private companies to teach them things and give them things to do. A report last year by charity Médecins Sans Frontières found high levels of mental distress among those housed at Wethersfield and identified worrying numbers of people for whom the site was unsuitable, complaining of poor conditions and structural violence. The conditions in the site itself, frequently described by residents as prison-like, exacerbate psychological distress in the people held there, it says. It quoted one man given the alias Fadil, who complained of fights breaking out amongst those lodging with him. He said, "They didn't tell us that we would live in porter cabins. Each porter cabin has six people, and bathrooms are shared and far away. I swear, I feel like my head is going to explode with anxiety and thinking, and at the same time, it is noisy." Fadil also described the shared bathrooms with different communities, explaining sometimes you don't even want to go to the bathroom because of the dirt. So this is the reason why they're going out in the fields, because the shared facilities are absolutely disgusting. And that should really say to us, we should be concerned. This is the way that they treat shared facilities among their own people, that the only people they are sharing it with is their own, and the toilets are absolutely disgusting. How are they going to treat the shared facilities of the country when it's being shared with people that aren't their own people from their own group? But of course, the state that the toilets are left in really sort of tells us the state that Britain is going to be left in, and the wider community, after these people have been welcomed into it. And the report quotes another asylum seeker at the camp as saying no account was taken of the mental state of those they were housed with. He said, "There are people suffering from mental health issues, so they could be knocking on our door at night time and try to assault us. So instead of helping those with mental health difficulties and putting them in a separate place to us to help them heal or give them all the medical assistance they need, they put us all together. We can see they might want to attack us." So you can see there, you've also got a lot of people with mental problems that somehow they've managed to get all the way from Africa to Britain, and they're now in our country, and we're saying, oh, this is a problem that we have to deal with. It's not a problem that we should be having to deal with. We should just be sending these people back to safe third countries, and we should be saying, we're not going to give you any foreign aid unless you accept these people back in your country. Then they would be safe. They would be in a warm country. They would be somewhere that was much closer to them culturally than all the way over here. And most importantly, it would get rid of this pull factor, the pull factor of the naked young women walking around everywhere, and the alcohol that they can take, and the abuse that they can dish out to people. And when people complain about it, they're the ones that get arrested. That would do away with all of these pull factors, because those are the pull factors. And they are the pull factors for the very, very worst people, because decent people would not find that to be a pull factor. Again, which is why these people that are coming over here, they're the very worst people a lot of the time. And I was also told that when I went to Turkey. I went there on holiday. I got friendly with street musicians over there. I was playing the drums with them. And I said to them, what are the Turkish like in my country? And he said, don't have anything to do with them. They're really bad people. All the worst people in Turkey go to Europe. We don't want them here. So they leave here and they go to Europe. Have nothing to do with them. And this is direct from the horse's mouth. This is before I was a nationalist. I was really quite shocked and surprised to hear this. But it makes sense, doesn't it? The very worst people that will be attracted to alcohol and sex and women running around naked, it's going to be the worst people that are going to be attracted to that. And it is, sadly. And our government must know this, and yet they still encourage it. Anyway, there's more to this article. I will put the link in the podcast description. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.